This is the FICO Identity Matters podcast.
Hello and welcome to the FICO Identity Matters podcast. FICO recently commissioned a global survey examining people's shifting attitudes towards identity, identity theft, and biometrics, to name a few. Today's podcast focuses on the North American results of this wide-reaching survey, which we hope will lead to banks better understanding the pain points customers face when dealing with financial services. FICO asked, what is the impact of identity checking on customer experience, and what will customers do about it? To talk about the results today, I'm joined by three members of the FICO team. Liz Lasher, Vice President of Corporate Strategy at FICO. Fernando Lopez, a senior fraud consultant working in payments, financial crime, analytics, and risk management, and Sarah Rutherford, a senior director managing the marketing of FICO's identity and authentication solutions. Would you care to introduce yourselves?
Hi, Will. I'm Sarah Rutherford, and I manage the marketing of FICO's identity and authentication solutions.
Hi, Will. This is Fernando Lopez, and I'm responsible for fraud initiatives in North America for ID proofing and authentication.
Hi, everyone. Liz Lasher here. I'm with FICO's corporate strategy team.
Great to speak to you all once again. Today, Sarah, Liz, and Fernando will be giving us some insight into the issues, the discoveries, and some pointers on what the financial sector needs to do. Without further ado, let's get down to business. My first question today is, are we ready for biometrics? Biometrics are more and more common in everyday life, perhaps in more ways than most of us even realize or care to think about. While they seem here to stay, they generally get a bad press, and Hollywood is fixated with painting biometric ID in a bad light, with actors losing eyes and fingers all over the place. But Sarah, what did the survey reveal about US consumers' attitudes to biometrics?
Well, fortunately, we didn't find that anybody had lost any of their biometrics along the way, which is always comforting. And actually, they haven't been too scared by Hollywood and the bots and all taking over and all of that kind of scary stuff. In fact, the proportion of people that thought that their bank should never capture a biometric was really low. In the US, it was just 15% of people say that their bank should never capture a biometric. And in Canada, it was 17%. And there was a little bit of variation by age. So if you look at Canada, it was as high as 21% of 45 to 54-year-olds say that banks should never capture a biometric. And in the USA, the 55 to 64-year-olds were the slightly more worried cohort, and they were more cautious. And 22% of them said that they should never have a biometric captured. If you look at the rest of the people that participated, then the vast majority are happy to have their biometric information used by the banks to secure their accounts. So this is specifically for the purpose of securing their accounts. However, of the 60% plus that were happy to have their biometric used by their bank for security, the majority of those did actually want to understand why it was happening. So what we can take from that is that it's very important for banks to actually explain to people why they're taking these measures, why they're used to using biometric. But people are pretty much open to using biometrics to secure their accounts.
That's good to know. Fernando, do you think these figures match the bank's experience? Will we see acceleration in biometrics in the next few years? And doesn't it seem like a perfect solution for ease of ID proofing?
Absolutely. You know, I can share with you that there is and was hesitation by financial institutions to embrace biometrics. They were definitely concerned that the individual, the consumer, wouldn't accept the idea of being able to take a selfie or register their voice as part of a means for authentication. But obviously, that's not the case. You know, Sarah's numbers in the survey definitely support the fact that people are willing. People are becoming much more educated. The government is also instilling regulations that have been dictated by consumers that they'd like to have certain type of privacy around it, where they can determine whether the information would be stored and be persistent or whether it would not be. So the banks have the absolute flexibility to be able to control that. And biometrics does provide an enhanced security. You know, today there's already the average individual, or in a day, there's 93 million selfies. And of those 93 million, 64% are shared on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So this is an absolutely good time and a correct time for banks to introduce it, especially with the acceleration of digital.
Mm. And while we're talking about this, Fernando, can you explain behavioral biometrics over physical biometrics?
Yeah. So, you know, physical biometrics, you know, stepping away from the movies, it is your face capture, meaning the photo, the selfie that's being taken, and the photo, yeah, the photo that's digitally registered that would be compared, or your voice itself. Now, behavior is the absolute key. That combined with biometrics is the future. The ability to determine and understand whether the individual that's interacting and how they're interacting with your organization or conducting the transaction is within their profile and norm. And if that transaction that they're conducting or interaction is in a profile of a fraudulent case, that behavioral analytics is extremely key that will allow the organizations to monitor and have an additional measure with biometrics to figure out whether this is the right individual.
Right. And is that happening now, or is this sort of cutting edge, or is it something of the future?
It is cutting edge, but it is happening now. You know, we've seen this very much in the last 25 plus years, where organizations have been using Falcon to be able to monitor behavior in individuals' transactions. The financial institutions have recognized that that type of performance, that type of false positive, that meaning low impact to the consumer themselves, that type of technique and innovation can be applied to the biometric space as well as the ID proofing and authentication space.
Right. Fantastic. That's really interesting. So if I can bring Liz in, Liz, from your professional perspective, should we be concerned about biometrics?
You know, in the first podcast, we started touching on how privacy is really a value in the American culture. But really, Americans have also become acclimated, normalized to physical biometrics. I mean, we all have been using our thumbprints and our face ID to open our phones for ages now. So it is becoming normalized, and we're used to those types of interactions. I think the important thing here, though, and Sarah kind of touched on this as well, is giving context for why you're asking for the biometric. To help secure your account, please do X, right? And because then it's giving that context and reassuring the consumer that it's not just needless information, that helps build trust in the relationship with their financial institution. And then when you start looking at the behavioral biometrics that Fernando was talking about, I mean, this is really, really powerful, because what you're able to do then is you're able to help increase in security, the security level, without impacting the difficulty for a consumer to use any given service. And so it's getting consumers to, you know, potentially in some countries needing to opt into that type of profiling. But if you can explain why and how it's going to help protect them from identity theft, ensure mutual authentication, then it becomes a very powerful tool in our tool chest against the fight against criminals. Yeah. So again, I think biometrics are normalized. I don't think people have this like Hollywood mind control fear of them anymore. Okay. And banks are benefiting from not being necessarily the earliest adopters of it. At the same time, though, and I'm sure Fernando could speak to this as well, you know, there are different, not just different types of biometrics as in physical versus behavioral, but thinking about what's the difference between biometrics that are inherent to your phone versus having device-independent biometrics. I think that kind of nuance is perhaps lost on consumers. And, you know, maybe it's not part of what needs to be their experience, but it's certainly part of what a bank should be considering from a security perspective.
Yeah, so perhaps that's a good point for me to roll things back a little. I think I need to get a better grip on what we mean when we say biometrics. So perhaps I can ask you, Sarah, do people, myself included, misinterpret what providing biometric data actually is?
You're listening to the FICO Identity Matters podcast.
Yeah, I think that people are to a certain extent, because they may have formed an opinion of what a biometric is based on an old trope from a movie or such like. Indeed. And they're not actually seeing it in the context of their everyday lives. And this was reflected in the survey when we asked people about the types of organisation that already hold their biometric information. And here was one of the instances where we had a really big contrast between those people in growth economies, such as the Southeast Asian countries and some of the LATAM countries, and those in North America. People in those growth economies actually had a relatively realistic opinion of where their biometrics were held. They knew that their biometrics were held by a wide range of organizations most of the time. Whereas in the US, Canada, and indeed in the UK, New Zealand and Australia, they had a different story. People don't think that the organizations that they deal with, including the government, have their biometric. So just one example of this. When we asked people if they thought the government had their biometric, only 31% of Canadians thought that the government has their biometric. Well, 66% of Canadians hold a passport, and that passport is a biometric passport. So they will have had to have provided a facial image to a biometric standard to the a government department to get that passport, and yet they're not really thinking that that's providing a biometric.
No, there's a disassociation there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think that's understandable because we've been taking out passports with photos for, you know, many, many years, if not centuries, and we don't really consider it as being biometric. And another example was with social media platforms. So the percentage that think that a social media platform has their biometric is really low. It's less than 20% for the US and actually barely 10% for Canada think that their social media platform or a social media platform has their biometric. Now, you know, we're all using Facebook and other social media platforms, and they use facial recognition in order to tag people in photographs. That tagging, it might not feel like a serious use of biometrics, but it is facial recognition, and that is a form of biometric identification. It might not be referred to as such, and it's possibly not as reliable as you would need if you were trying to prove your identity to your bank, but nevertheless it is a biometric recognition of you.
Fascinating stuff. So Liz, can you explain perhaps where the fear factor comes from? Is it down to privacy, a lack of understanding, or is it something else?
I do think you're right. It comes down to privacy as that value and the fear that it's going to be exploited, the biometrics are going to be exploited. And so there's a distrust. But as Sarah points out, you know, we all have driver's licenses too, at least the vast majority of us in North America. And so our biometrics are already out there, and we've given them ourselves to social media. So it's not just the government who has them. And so I think that privacy is the main concern and the main driver of the fear. But again, it's normalized now. I mean, people are, it now depends on the type of biometric, whether or not that fear exists. A photo ID does not typically concern people, right? If we were talking retinal scans, I don't think that's quite been normalized yet for many Americans and Canadians. But certainly, you know, I have a biometric passport that uses my fingerprints when I come back into the US and run through customs and immigration. And I'm used to it now, right? I'm used to using my thumbprint to log into my phone. So it now comes down to the nuance of type of biometric, I think.
But what about biometrics in terms of discrimination? Is that an issue? Like, can behavioral profiling come out of behavioral biometrics, for example?
I think when we're talking about behavioral biometrics, the most common example I tend to give is keystroke analysis. So, Will, let's say that I have a copy of your password. I know what your password was because it was compromised in a breach. Well, how you type your password is a unique signature of you. How I type your password is quite different. And that's a really good example of behavioral profiling and behavioral biometrics, which is looking for an out-of-pattern behavior from your normal pattern. And so it's much less about kind of what you were initially referencing and more about trying to understand what your standard normalized behavior is and then when it's out of pattern, because that could indicate a risky situation.
Yeah. Okay. So, Fernando, moving on to you, I think we've got a grip on how we should think of the biometric now, but can you perhaps walk us through some of the advanced and, let's be honest, pretty cool stuff banks are doing now in biometric technology terms?
So facial recognition is one of many biometric measures. And with facial recognition, banks have taken a very accelerated step, a very advanced step, meaning that they've incorporated artificial intelligence as well as machine learning. So what these models do is that they analyze up to 200 different facial characteristics. They're training to figure out different characteristics, such as positioning of the eyes, the nose, but then also incorporating things such as inflections of the face as well, too. So yeah. Something, things that are unique to that individual. And they all get stored very much in a hashed key, meaning that the raw data, will of your face or of my face, isn't stored persistently on a server, or it can be configured not to be stored persistently. Only that hashed key, which becomes very difficult to be able to reverse engineer to exploit the exact image or recreate the exact image to do that comparison. This actually takes away some of the bias in being able to do the comparison. It becomes very systematic as well and automated to do a real-time comparison from a one-to-many or many-to-many comparisons of faces of individuals, because it's done in very much of a mathematical calculation. And it takes away as well the necessity of a human intervention for someone to actually analyze the pictures and do a comparison of the two.
Right.
So becoming a lot more streamlined and seamless in making a better decision.
But going back to behavioral biometrics, what I was just thinking was, isn't it a little creepy that some of this can go on without the person knowing? For instance, Liz talked about keystroke analysis. As I say, isn't that coming back to the fear factor? And how do we avoid that? Is the onus on, say, a financial institution to inform its clients that they're using it and why they're using it and how it's to the benefit of everybody?
Benefit is the right word. Educating the consumer, the individual, the customer, that it's used to monitor their behavior and ensure that it is within their pattern. The benefit is that they then do not see any friction. It becomes a frictionless interaction with the organization, and so that they can go ahead and conduct it in a merry way without having anything prevented that might be time critical for them to transact or make some changes as well.
So again, we're back to the sort of ease of the customer experience, aren't we?
Correct, yeah. The high level of customer satisfaction.
Yeah. So that brings us nicely onto the final talking point for today's brief session, is how keen people are to use biometrics. Let me ask you first, Sarah. Do people now expect to have to provide a biometric, given what we've talked about, even if they're reluctant to do so, and in many cases, again, as we've discussed, aren't exactly sure what it is? Is it okay? Are we seeing more?
You're listening to the FICO Identity Matters podcast.
Yeah, so, well, I think people, you know, I don't think there is much reluctance. And I think any bank that has been holding back from using biometrics because they've been worried about user adoption, you know, now is the time that they could actually get on board with that. But I think what was interesting for me was that the percentage of people that were actually ready to set up that biometric during the onboarding process. So this is, you know, roughly around about 43% of people. So almost half of people are already ready when they're doing their application to set up a biometric. And that's absolutely the ideal point to do it, because people know that they've got those steps to go through as they're opening their account. And you can capture a biometric at that point.
Yeah, because they're expecting it.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be a physical biometric. So, you know, you can, and even you're already taking their facial image in order to do the comparison to their passport to prove that they are who they say they are. So why not enroll that facial image then and there, ready for future authentication? Similarly, you know, there's lots of other things that you can do at the point of application to set yourself up for good authentication in the future. So you can take the information about the device that they're using, so that next time that they come to their account, you recognize them by your recognition of their device. And that, again, frictionless. You can get them to type in their password or say a passphrase when they're applying for an account. And then you've got that ready for the next time that they visit their account and you want to authenticate themselves. And this is where, you know, having the ability to take that information at account opening and then utilize it across the customer journey every time they interact with you is vital. And the organizations that have the ability to have that straight through process are going to have it much easier and smoother with their customers when it comes to protecting their accounts.
Right, fantastic. And I think the crucial point you made there a couple of times was maybe preparing for the future. It could be that some data is captured with a view to sort of, you know, earmarking it for future use, but it would make the future customer journey smoother, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, every time you use your account, the organization needs to know that you're still you and that it isn't a fraudster that's taken over your account. So, you know, if you're making a payment out of your account, they need to know that it's not a fraudster that's learnt enough about you from all of the data breaches and information that's available. Maybe they've, you know, done a bit of phishing. Maybe they've, you know, socially engineered you to find out some information about you that would give them enough in order to be able to access your account and take the money out of your account. So they need to check it's still the legitimate account opener every single time, because they don't want to be giving your money away to a fraudster. So that's the future element of it, is you don't want to set up, open an account for a customer, and then when it comes to the next time they use it, you've got to set up a different process in order to be able to check that it is still them. Or you don't want to be using lots of different passwords and getting them to go find their mobile phones to, again, to go do a one-time passcode onto a website. You want to have everything set up and ready. And it's not necessarily automatic. If you're using one system to do your identity proofing when somebody opens an account and a different system for them to authenticate themselves every time they use their account, then that straight through process is much more difficult.
Yeah, and that's quite a pain point from a consumer point of view, isn't it?
Yes, indeed it is, because, yeah, I mean, everyone, you will need to enroll them into different factors as you develop your relationship with them. But, you know, you want to have the most that you can as invisibly as possible, collect it all straight away at the beginning. You know, they're signing their terms and conditions. You can get that all as much as possible up front, and then you don't have to bother them for it again in the future.
Brilliant. So, Liz, what's your take on this? Do you think people are keen? Do you think they're keen enough?
I think they are absolutely keen. I mean, as Sarah's talking about, it's not only, it's more secure to enroll immediately at point of application into all of the biometrics that you would use going forward for authentication, but it's also just easier for the consumer. So just do it all in one go. If you're going to be doing the biometrics anyhow for identity proofing, then you might as well carry that forward to future authentication. And people are keen to do it. I mean, when you think about password management, as easy as password managers are, and I was touting them in our first podcast because they are so keenly important, it is so much easier when I pick up my phone and I use my face to open my bank account. It just is, right? It takes a lot less time. I don't have to invoke the password manager to figure out what is my unique password for this one account. And it just becomes just a very streamlined experience. And I think that many people are also finding that and are also using biometrics as a preferred way to authenticate and log in.
So it's creating an easier, smoother experience that's also more secure. So there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
Yes, exactly. Win-win.
Yeah. Okay. So that brings me nicely onto Fernando. I'd like to ask you, when will we see industry-wide adoption of biometric solutions, or perhaps have we already?
It's starting to happen now. We're very much seeing it in the telco space, as well as the financial services, you know, very much today as well, you know, as we covered the very encompassing what biometric data is or what biometrics are for an organization for security. We're doing it today. You know, the minute that I can actually do a Amazon purchase with a one click. So there is going to be very much an increasing need, meaning that it's not just going to be for onboarding, it's not just going to be applying for new services, but even just regular interaction. Sarah said it extremely well about the idea of let's capture that trusted ID on the onset immediately.
Yeah.
So that we can authenticate Will when Will wants to do subsequent transactions and transactions that might be of higher risk. Why do I have to contact Will for that one-time password again to make sure that it is him? I know enough about the device he uses, the keystrokes that you're using, your photo that's been digitized through machine learning and artificial intelligence to be able to use facial recognition for future use, or your voice. So that at that moment, at that time, within the channel, whether you're online or at the branch, I can authenticate you very well as a financial institution and allow that transaction to go right through and making your life much easier.
Fantastic. So what would you say to a bank that hasn't yet adopted biometric technologies, or is it safe to say they all have?
No, there are some financial institutions that have not adopted it yet. They haven't adopted a full comprehensive strategy. Some might be doing it in piecemeal today, and it is imperative that they start looking things much more holistically. They start looking at having an omni-channel solution, understanding the collection of data, whether it's internal or external, how they can intelligently use them and orchestrate them at the time of the transaction, meaning when and how, and turning that information into a meaningful decision. So am I calling an outsource during a specific channel that doesn't require an IP of the device to be verified? Hmm. And then also making sure that I'm also encompassing exactly what Sarah and Liz had mentioned, the idea of biometrics and behavioral, not just at the time of the ID proofing, but as well as the life of the account and the authentication.
Yeah. So Sarah, Liz, Fernando, I think we all agree biometrics are an absolutely key part of identity proofing, managing identity theft, and enabling the banks to offer smoother, slicker service to the consumers. So having discussed it thoroughly now, I'd like to thank you all for taking part in today's podcast. And that concludes our event today. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you, Will.
Thanks.
If you'd like to know more about FICO, contact us today via our website at fico.com/identity or listen to our podcasts at fico.fm.